Welcome to Easy Benefits Blueprint. I am Hugh Doyle, and I am the CEO of Easy Benefits, and I'm here with my colleague, John Rodnick.
Yeah, and I'm John Rodnick, the Managing Director here at Easy Benefits, and we're here to talk today about why benefits are broken.
Yeah, so John, I guess we've been chatting about this for many years now, but I guess one of the reasons, you know, and some of the reasons, I guess I'll just start firing off why I think they're broken. Obviously, rising premiums, massive issue for employers, and then plan design, you know, things like plan design not changing. I arrived, I think, from Ireland almost 14 years ago now, and, you know, I always use the example, paramedics were $500, and then we come across a lot of plans, they're still $500, you know, which doesn't make any sense when you think of the rising costs of those coverages. And then the other big one, of course, John, that we chat about is mental health coverage. Just, you know, the one size fits all and maybe lack of flexibility around that. And then I would say the lack of flexibility in general on plans, where it's a one size fits all approach, which doesn't really make any sense, I think, anymore, right?
Well, and I think you've kind of hit the nail on the head there, Hugh. And I find one of the things that our industry does a bad job at sometimes is I think we like to make it a lot more complicated than it actually is. I can't tell you how many business owners or employees we talk to on a day-to-day basis where they don't understand the scope of their coverages. There's employers that are offering, you know, a very generous Cadillac-style benefits program, and the employees aren't getting the value out of it. They're just simply not understanding where they can use it, how they can optimize it. And so there's often a mismatch. That's the other side of it too, is, you know, you've kind of got multiple generations of employees now. It's still kind of been that one size fits all for employees. And really what we're seeing more and more is frustration with the employees on the side of, hey, this coverage isn't working for me. But then you've also got employers who are saying, I'm putting a lot of money into this and I'm not necessarily getting the time value out of it or my employees' appreciation out of this as well too. You know, the retirement piece, I think, is another piece as well too. Do you want to talk about? Yeah.
I think retirement, but just before we even go there, John, you mentioned something that I think is, you know, when we're talking to our friends in the HR people space, you know, one of the things that they keep pushing for, and I think we've moved forward with it very much so, but I still think the industry lags and benefit plans lack, is the cost of benefits been part of total compensation. You know, I think what you mentioned there is you've got two things that are contrasting. You got the employer who's spending what is significant money. Benefits is, you know, if you look at it, it's a significant bill to the employer. But then on the other side, you've got the employee, and very often the employee doesn't even know what the benefits are costing the employer. And then on your side, what you mentioned there is, and sometimes the plan is just wrong for the employee, so it's lose-lose. So, yeah, I think that's one of the things that really sticks out to me, is like how benefit plans need to be part of total compensation, and all parties need to understand what that is, right?
100%. And, you know, I think this is, you know, when we look at why this has kind of been going on, I think I would say the benefits brokerage market, you know, it's become complacent really over time. I can't tell you, it's really become a rinse and repeat where, you know, there's clients we're walking into where, oh, my broker's going out every couple of years, we're changing benefits plans, we're not really upgrading the program. I think there's a lot of stagnation in the market. And quite frankly, like, that's where we are often as a industry letting our clients down, where we should be doing a lot more for them as well too.
And John, I think we've noticed, you know, we've been in this world as well, but the amalgamation of brokers, right? So you've got a lot of brokers now who have amalgamated practice, be it right or wrong. But that amalgamation, I think, has led to, if anything, in the broker world, you know, I'm going to say a lack of creativity in a lot of cases. I'm not going to say all. I think complacency. I think there's a massive amount of complacency. Of course, I'm not going to say that's with all. We all know of some great people that have moved their businesses forward in those situations. But I also do think, you know, complacency is just a word whenever we come across plans or we're talking to, again, HR people or head of people, that they're just looking for more, and the creativity isn't there. And then when I go back to my example of, been 14 years in Canada, a ParaMed staying at $500. You know, that's the one that always hits me, to know no broker or most brokers don't even inflation protect that. That just, for me, is it just really, really strikes me as total complacency.
100%. And I think now more than ever, we're also seeing other things. You know, you've got cost pressures in a time of economic uncertainty with businesses where they need to be looking at things to look after their bottom line first and foremost, but they also still want to be adding value to their employees. I mean, we've all been there when, you know, you're in front of a business owner and the cost isn't there for them to be able to continue to offer the same level of benefits, and they know it's a tough conversation. So even on the other side, you know, you look at something like a long-term disability benefit. We've seen what's happened in the market over the last few years where mental health is almost close to 50% of mental health claims that are going through long-term disability now. With that spike, I mean, the cost for employees, even on long-term disability, is starting to become unaffordable as well too. So all of these things are really kind of reaching a boiling over point where cost is now becoming at the forefront, but we are also still looking at opportunities to really optimize and bring forth new solutions, because while disability is super important, at the same time, we also need to be looking at adding value to those employees so that they're getting the true value out of their benefits program as well too.
And I think you hit something on the head there. A lot of plans are set up that the employee is paying for disability. We're seeing some where the employer is starting to pay for that as well. But I think coming out of COVID, one of the things that from the employee and their viewpoint is the cost of living can't be ignored either. You know, when we look at an employee's paycheck, especially in certain sectors, I think there's I think that can't be ignored. I think there's, you know, we have industries, John, where there's everything from, you know, a junior person starting out making a low hourly salary, for want of a better word, and they really can't afford any dollars off their paycheck, right? But then we've execs where they want to buy more. So it's just it's interesting to me how broken that is, that we lump in a CEO of a company with a 22-year-old that's maybe starting out in their career and making an hourly wage, you know, working their way up, but also struggling with the cost of living, right?
Well, and I think that's also what does the business owner or the employer some trouble sometimes as well too, because you know the employer or the employee, pardon me, also often kind of feels like mistrust because you know I'm spending a lot of money, but I don't really see the value in what I'm getting out of this. And you know you could have a 100% benefit program, but because you've got a high long-term disability rate, to your point, Hugh, that employee who's making $18 to $20 an hour, that's not going to be working for them because, you know, they're worried about, you know, their next paycheck and being able to provide for their family. And they may have fantastic benefits, but the cost of those benefits is now becoming detrimental to their well-being as well too. And it's actually accomplishing the exact opposite that the employer set out to do.
John, the part you're about to jump into there that I'd love to just take a little dive into as well. That's I'm going to say it's a bit of a pet peeve of mine at the moment, is group retirement for employees. And I think the areas that I see there is broken. You know, the broker world is not spending enough time doing things like looking at funds that are underperforming, outdated, which is obviously part of cap compliance as well, but we see that all the time where it's ignored. I think more times than not we're seeing it. And it's the frustration on my part is that the broker world isn't, you know, it's a fixed cost to the employer. So let's just say it's a 4 or 5% match. The employer is spending that 4 or 5%, but ultimately, you know, every employer we know really wants to get the most out of that for employees, and we're just seeing the waste in that and the money that that's adding up to over time, which is ultimately costing the employee. And then the other thing I think there is, you look at forward-thinking companies, and we're very fortunate that we work with a lot of forward-thinking organizations that, you know, help us and frankly help educate you and I. These people we work with have been a great resource to us in a lot of ways. But I look at companies that are doing things like career mapping. They're actually sitting down doing proper reviews with their employees. And you know, group retirement is the one thing at the moment that I think it really sticks out to me that employees care a lot about. You know, and brokers need to be illustrating better and showing what employees need to be putting aside, frankly, to reach their retirement goals. And then, you know, we've even seen it within our own industry where companies are offering, you know, maybe 1.5-2% match in industries, you know, like our own, where you're saying the employees should really maybe see a path forward on that. I don't know what your thoughts are on that, but I...
No, and I think you kind of hit the nail on the head where, you know, you came back, I'll come back to your original comment there on the total rewards piece where, you know, being able to illustrate the value of the group retirement program as part of that total compensation statement, like that's a massive value add for those employees as well too. And to your point, I think what's often not done often enough in our industry is I don't think group retirement plans are reviewed, quite frankly, enough. And I can't tell you, you know, we walk into a program and we're looking at it and the funds haven't been reviewed in, you know, 5 to 10 years. The IMFs haven't been looked at in 5 to 10 years. You now have, you know, a couple million dollars of assets, and that IMF is 30 to 40 basis points above where it should be for an organization of that size. And we're looking at fixing that right away. Illustrating the value and the dollar cost of that to the employer is massive, because what we can do with that afterwards is impactful for the employees. And I think two things I'm going to hit on with that regards is, you know, looking at restriction rules around group retirement programs and really being able to have them structured properly for employees. The employer is able to illustrate that to the employee where they're all able to get to the point that they're able to have very low investment management fees and they can really drive a proper retirement savings. I also think, and I know Hugh and I, you've chatted about this all the time, but there's nothing better than, you know, you've got an employee who's been there for 10 years and they look at that group retirement account and go, hey, you know, me working at this organization, this is the money that I've been able to save through working here through their support. And then, you know, when we're talking about supporting people in that financial fragile state, because, you know, more and more Canadians, as we see it, are getting into that position now, unfortunately, with the economy where we're at right now. We're even starting, you know, as employers are becoming ways that, you know, helping their employees on the retirement side. One thing that's becoming more prominent to us is, hey, we're doing a base contribution of, you know, whether it's 1-2%. So those employees who, you know, maybe don't have the funds right now to contribute, they're still getting a small contribution from their employer, and then they are matching for those higher amounts. So at least there is that base amount going into their programs. But then those that are able to contribute more are still getting a higher match as well, too.
John, the other thing I felt, you know, we've had, we deal with a lot of sectors, right? Tech, manufacturing, construction, just to name but a few. But, you know, more recently in the manufacturing space, we've got a lot of people that English is not a first language. And it really struck home to me, a lot were lower income earners, English not a first language. Retirement plan in place when we took over, and they didn't understand what they had, and they didn't understand how to use it and how to contribute. So these people are missing out on a matching, didn't understand the tax benefits of that. And I felt, again, what we're talking about today is why benefits are broken. I felt there was an obligation on us as brokers to really not ignore that, because it's too easy to ignore that. And those people are, you know, need that help. They need the hand holding. They probably need us to, you know, maybe wake up a little bit and realize that not everything can be done online. Sometimes you need to go on the factory floor again and then sit at the lunch table and walk them through it and maybe, you know, have the resources so that you can have a call with them and their spouse or whoever it might be. But I really, that was one area in the last, you know, month or two that I'm saying, wow, that's that was disappointing. But I think it probably happens more than we for benefits and group retirement, more than we really recognize in the brokerage world, right?
Yeah, and I think it comes down to us as brokers and advisors and consultants and being able to be there to educate our clients as well too. And that's really what we need to be doing, is putting resources into being top of mind for clients as well too, and being able to consistently go back and say, hey, here's where things are at, here's what's going on, here's the evolving trends, because it's very easy to just set it, forget it, and then let's talk every, you know, 9 months or every year at renewal. It's very easy to get into that state, and I think it's super important for us to always be presenting new solutions to our clients as well too.
And John, I can't help but go down the road then of ratio, and we're biased. We're going to say boutique is better, obviously, but I think I truly do believe if we look at ratios of clients to account managers, you know, we've heard the crazy stories of 150 clients per account manager. And, you know, we pride ourselves, we're around 30 accounts per account manager, right? And that's where that's our way of obviously choosing to run easy benefits. We feel like it's the right way, of course, but I do feel like that makes a difference. You can't serve, in my opinion, 160 clients with an account manager, you know, that maybe has, you know, 3 years experience. Even if they had 20 years experience, it's an impossible task to do it and do it right. And I think we're seeing that all the time. Like we're seeing those ratios out there in the marketplace where when we, one of the questions you and I always ask is, well, do you know how many clients your account manager is managing? And then I think one or two of our clients have really pushed, you know, they're now our clients, really pushed and said and asked their account managers, and that has come out. And of course, with those ratios, you're not getting that kind of, I'm going to say, boutique, again, level of service. And I think that's a major issue when we say benefits is broken. The brokerage world as a whole kind of has to take responsibility for that. You can't, you know, that's maybe why benefit plans have not changed. And that's maybe why design isn't at the forefront, because frankly, the people that are front facing on the file just don't have the time to do it.
100%. I couldn't really agree more on that side. Is, you know, you're often get into that place where you're just rinse and repeat because you're trying to keep your head above water yourself. And you, as the, the account manager, you're trying to service all your clients as much as you can. And, you know, you're doing enough sometimes on a day-to-day basis, whether it's resolving a claim issue or, you know, navigating a prior authorization medication to support an employer. But at the end of the day, balance that in with, you know, 150 accounts, as we discussed, and it's simply not possible. I mean, at the end of the day, you're not able to bring value to your clients in that regards, because at the end of the day, you're spread so thin that you're not able to support the clients to the adequate level that they deserve, to be quite frank.
Yeah, John, a lot of what's happened in the market with, you know, on the, if you look at the brokerage market and a lot of, or maybe family owned businesses that were, you know, big on the relationship side with their clients. And definitely, you know, I look at some of those brokers that we all know, I really love chatting with them. And I think they give a tremendous service to their clients in terms of being hands-on. And now, as we move towards this, you know, amalgamation model of, you know, of maybe private equity, public companies, or just larger companies in general, gobbling up other brokers, I think even resources, like we look at marketing, we have marketing on our client files. What does that mean? It means that we're advertising the benefits program or the retirement program as the client's program rather than maybe as the RBC or Sun Life program or the Easy Benefits program. No, it's all about the client. And we actually have dedicated marketing, you know, and I look at larger companies, there's maybe, you know, one marketing person that's definitely not doing anything client facing. They're doing solely publicity for that large entity. And I think that's the difference in when I look at the brokers that I really admire and that you and I spend time with, you know, competitors of ours, but people that we love sitting around, you know, breaking bread with and chatting about what we see as the problems. I really feel like they're the ones that are going to be the future of benefits, because they're giving their clients those resources. Not pretending, it's very easy to pretend you're giving the clients resources. We all know how that goes. But it's like, it's what, you know, when you sit down and you're doing a renewal and you actually have a multi-year strategy and you actually have a proper strategy and you can show the work you've done over those years, I think that's really where the industry needs to go. And I really think that's where it's broken.
Absolutely. And, you know, I know we've talked the last little bit about how to fix it or why it's broken, but, you know, I do want to say it's not all terrible. I do think there's a lot of good stuff, as you just kind of alluded to there, Hugh. There are a lot of good people doing good stuff for clients out there. You know, I think, you know, how do we look at fixing it? And I mean, I think some of the things that come to mind on my side is understanding your employee base to begin with, and understanding who's showing up for you to do your job, you know, what that looks like, being able to bring more tailored solution to your employees based on the client base that you have. And so who's the employees? Is it, because, you know, you could have two companies that look the same, they feel the same. Hey, we've got two 50 person organizations that are in the same industry in the same location, and they couldn't be further apart from benefit needs. needs just because of the makeup of their organization. And so some of the things that we look at is, you know, really you got to start with understanding the client base and the employee base. And so partnering with those employers and those HR partners and understanding the people that are working for them, that really helps us kind of craft a strategy. And as, you know, brokers, that's really kind of the ground floor of what we should be doing to really bring forth tailored solutions to a lot of our clients as well, too.
And John, you mentioned something there that I think is important, and I think it's really important that we're continuously improving when we do this, is making sure we understand the company through their people. Meaning, you know, if we're dealing with the HR team, that we truly become an extension of the HR team, because we're never going to know the people on in the company as well as the HR team there is. And the other one that we're big on is, you know, we still deal with, of course, in Canada here, a lot of privately owned companies. We're super proud of that. Super proud of, you know, working with, being a Canadian owned company and working with Canadian owned companies. I mean, it's wonderful. And one of the things, you know, even last night I was out with the owner of a tech firm here and a fellow European. So, but, you know, brought a lot of employment to Canada. And I think just doing that for me is super important. Sharing with me what's going on in their world, what's happening in terms of their hiring, what's happening in terms of their margins in this market. You know, trade is obviously a massive thing these companies are talking about. So I think as well, the way of fixing it is getting to know the companies more. You know, again, one size fits all. I feel like we have a job to do that's really digging in and getting to understand who it is. It could be something as simple as a car dealership. Well, you know, the way they're run or the way their philosophies around their people could be completely different depending on who the companies are, right?
Absolutely. And, you know, I will say we do come up and, you know, there are lots of clients out there and, you know, companies out there that are getting it right. And, you know, what do I look at as, you know, getting it right? And where do I say, hey, you know, you've got a great kind of thing in place here. And when that comes to mind, it's people that are kind of looking after their organization first and foremost, but also being able to kind of keep their budget on a consistent basis. And so, you know, what I'll say, a lot of companies have kind of shifted their philosophy around, and we're seeing this more and more with our clients as well, too, is, you know, moving away from that defined benefit and more to that defined contribution approach. And I find that's been such a win for a lot of our clients and, you know, other industries and individuals that we're talking to, because, you know, as we kind of alluded to at the start of the podcast here today, cost has been going up on a consistent basis. The size isn't working for everyone, where, you know, that one size fits all. There are organizations where it works great. Employers are super generous and, you know, they're offering the world for benefits and nobody can really be upset. But in a world of reality today where we're dealing with people where there's a cash crunch or a financial cost and employees wanting to have different things, I mean, we're five generations of people in the workforce now. Moving to that defined contribution model, introducing some flexibility where employees have the chance to choose what coverages matter most to them, that's really kind of where their employers are moving forward to really start to add a lot of value in the benefit space we're seeing.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. So anyway, we've kicked the ball around a lot on what's broken and hopefully added some positivity. A lot of clients doing things great. I can't help but notice one thing that's broken. In Ottawa, we have some nice microphones here, and in Toronto, our office doesn't, John. So maybe you need to get a fix on that, eh?
Here as we keep going.
Wow. We'll see how that goes, eh?
Yeah, absolutely.
Great. Well, listen, this is always a lot of fun. You know, John, you and I kind of talk about this regularly ourselves anyway, so kind of great to just break out and do it over a podcast and hopefully share it, and anyone that listens takes a few nuggets or reaches out to us with any questions.
Absolutely. Well, thanks everyone for tuning in to the Easy Benefits Blueprint. Stay tuned, subscribe if you want to hear more of these episodes, and there's more to come. Thanks everyone, and have a great day.
Thanks folks, have a great day.